Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Listen to KMOX anytime, anywhere. Download the Radio.com app today.
I have a confession. I'm addicted to the news.
You know I'm totally off script right now.
Journalism is cool again, and you have endless content, let's be honest.
And this is how I got elected, by being off script.
Now, Mark Reardon.
Well, I think he's got a lot of hand movement. I've never seen so much hand movement. I said, is he crazy, or is that just the way he acts?
On St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Hey, Dave Klein, pick up the phone. Pick up the phone. I'm calling. I'm calling the radio station right now. Are you there? Testing. 1, 2, 3. Testing. Am I there, Dave?
You are live, Mark.
We should explain. You know, my boss, Steve Moore, won't like this because he doesn't like when we talk about technical problems. But about 1:30 this afternoon, I'm sitting at home, and the power went out completely. And then it kind of popped back on, tried to come back on twice, and with no power comes no Wi-Fi. So I'm in the parking lot of the Drury Inn in the Hampton Inn, Dave, at 141 and 44. On a beautiful day, I can have the windows open, and I don't have to worry about the air conditioning and all that. So we're hoping we can get some power back. We have Senator Hawley coming up here in just a couple of minutes, and we'll get to some other stuff. Brian Ting, our friend from KNX in Los Angeles, on the wildfires. We only have an hour. If it's going to happen on one of these days, it's going to be a good day for this to happen today because we have baseball coming up a little after 3 o'clock. Let me start with St. Louis County Councilman Tim Fitch, who is my councilman, former chief of police in St. Louis County. We had Chief Fitch on yesterday talking about Sam Page and a new, I guess, what would you call, do you call these bills, Chief, or proposals that would put a little bit of a check on Sam Page and limit some of the power when it comes to COVID. Good afternoon, first and foremost. How are you? You might have power out at your home, too. But what happened with this? You seemed confident yesterday that this was going to pass.
Absolutely, because I had every indication it would. And then at the last minute, Councilman Ernie Trakas changed his mind and decided that he would use a legal reason to vote no.
Well, what led to that decision on the part of Councilman Trakas? Is there something that you can point us toward? Is there a theory or anything like that?
Well, I could only tell you what he said. What he said was, and keep in mind that we received a legal opinion from the county counselor's office. I received it 7 minutes before the meeting started, 7 minutes, saying, well, wait a minute, we don't think that these new bills could withstand legal challenges. So we object, basically. And remember, those are just opinions. There's oftentimes the county counselor gives us an opinion and we disagree with it and do what we want to do anyway. And those are opinions. Remember, the county counselor is appointed by Sam Page. So she could be fired tomorrow if she makes a decision that he doesn't like. So you have to take it with a grain of salt. And generally speaking, Ernie Trakas does that. He is the most critical council member of the county counselor's office. Has always said we needed our own attorney instead of relying on them. Well, yesterday he relied on their opinion to vote no. That's really what happened.
So where does this leave you?
Well, the bills, the substitute bills died. So that means we have to come up with new legislation or a new substitute bill to the original bills. But basically what these two bills would have done, it would have given the county executive the authority to issue, no questions asked, for 15 days a state of emergency, and the director of public health 15 days to issue a public health order. At the end of the 15 days, the orders could expire unless the council voted to extend them, and then with a hard deadline date. And they could be extended again if the council felt like they should be extended. And it would require a two-thirds majority vote of the council. So we knew we had a supermajority of the people that thought these were so important they should be extended. And at the end of the day, they died. So we kind of start from scratch, and let's see where this goes.
Well, does starting from scratch basically mean at this point say uncle, or do you keep going at this?
No, I never say uncle. When I think we're right, we're going to keep moving forward. And I think we're right. And I will tell you that the political winds against Ernie Trakas have come crashing down on him since yesterday, as they should, because it would have been common courtesy for him to call Mark Carter or myself and said, listen, I suddenly have a problem with these bills. He didn't say a word until it was time to vote. So it sounded very staged and very planned with him and some of the Democrats on the council. Rita Days actually sided with Mark Carter and I. So it sounds very staged and planned, and I can't answer as to why that would be.
All right, Chief. Well, I appreciate you coming on here this afternoon. Keep us posted if you have any changes moving forward. It's frustrating because I think we've had, you know, just on this particular issue, going back to earlier this summer, I was going through my Twitter timeline yesterday looking for something and found my tweets about, you know, the campaign that we did a few weeks ago that was related to a piece of property, writing some emails, and then writing some emails about the youth sports issue. But the sausage making gets exposed in these situations, and that's what I think is even more frustrating, is that the voters can actually see some of this going on maybe more in front of them than they usually would. And I don't know what that means, because Sam Page won re-election. It never seems to make any difference despite all the anger at the box office, or the ballot box, not the box office.
Well, he won, but keep in mind, 62% of the people that voted for somebody other than Sam Page.
Right.
So it was a very, very narrow victory. He's got to start running again in about a year and a half.
Yeah, because that's a that's just fulfilling the Stanger term, which is important.
Right.
All right, Tim Fitch, I appreciate it. Hope your power's back.
All right, Mark, good luck. Good luck with yours.
All right, thank you very much. Yeah, 211. I'm kind of hamstrung here this afternoon because the power went out at the house, and we're hoping that it comes back on. And I'll just keep you posted on that. Senator Hawley is coming up here in a couple of minutes, and I may have to give up the magic of radio and how that's going to sound. But we'll get to that here in just a minute on KMOX, and we'll take you through the rest of the hour, hopefully. So we got baseball coming up. I mean, let me spend a little bit of time on what happened last night with Yachty and the Ryan Braun incident. It was interesting to me because I was watching the game, but I was also doing some work on my computer, and I looked up, and it was right at the moment that Ryan Braun did not like a call that was not a strike. I mean, if you were watching the game, it wasn't a strike. It looked a little off the lower corner, and he said, and you don't hear this, you know, when there's fans, you don't really hear this. He said, no, that was not a strike. And Jim Edmonds was talking about this with Danny Mac and how often something like that happens. And then you had the catcher's interference, and Yachty gets hurt, and then the bullpens empty out and the benches empty out, and Jed Jerko plays. Jed Jerko, I think, Dave Klein, tell me if you think this might be right. Didn't he get nominated today for the Nobel Peace Prize along with President Trump? Because if Jed Jerko wasn't there, I think that could have gotten a lot more ugly, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. He was a great peacemaker last night, or at least tried to be.
Well, I like what Mike Schilt said. He's going to stick up for his guys. I don't know exactly what the chirping was, but there's been a lot of it. And something tells me that this is not all going to get settled with the Brewers and the Cardinals even this season. But these things tend to linger, if you know what I mean. We'll take a break. We're coming back with more Senator Hawley coming up on KMOX this afternoon.
Mark Reardon now.
No, never. Yes, always.
Total Information PM at 4 on KMOX.
Well, the pandemic has led to a couple of interruptions related to technological differences, and we had one of those this afternoon. I'm still here, but I have to be on the phone because my power is out at my house, and the Wi-Fi is how we do the magical show. Now, I did, however, have the opportunity to have a great chat. It was just about an hour ago. We'll let go some of the magic here of how we do some of this stuff with Senator Josh Hawley, and as always, I asked him, Senator, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Let me try to tick off some topics here because, you know, I think there are quite a few. One thing that was interesting, I just watched a White House news conference with Kayleigh McEnany, and she actually had to bring up the Middle East peace deal at the end of the news conference because there was not one reporter in the entire news conference who asked her a question about that. I find that a little stunning.
Yeah, I'm laughing only because you either laugh or scream. But that's just totally absurd. It's totally absurd. I mean, Barack Obama got a Nobel Peace Prize for doing nothing, for giving speeches. And look at this is really historic stuff, as you know, Mark. I mean, this is in my lifetime. This is one of the biggest developments in the Middle East in my lifetime. And the president has done what everybody said he couldn't do.
So you just introduced something called the David Dorn Back the Blue Act. Finally, somebody giving some attention to police officers in this country. So tell me what that bill would do, and what are the realistic chances of getting this through the House with Nancy Pelosi?
I think that, the Democrats have become so anti-law enforcement, it's unbelievable. But here's my view, Mark. Every law enforcement officer in our state, and probably the nation, deserves a pay raise. And that's what this bill would do. It would make available to local police departments federal money to give officers pay raises right now and to put more officers out on the streets. You know, in St. Louis, 9 officers shot since June. 9. And it's just unbelievable. It has become an open season on cops. Of course, that means an open season on everybody that they protect. So we have got to stand with our officers right now, and we can begin doing that by giving them a pay raise. They deserve it.
By the way, I highlighted this yesterday. The numbers may have changed, and I just think this is outrageous when you think about the amount of violent crime we have here in St. Louis. As of yesterday, again, these numbers may have changed. We only have 2 fewer murders in the city of St. Louis than we do COVID deaths for the last 6 months. So, look, I bring it up because that should horrify people when you think about the number of even kids, the number of children, 15, 11, 10, that have died in gunfire and violence in St. Louis. And then we're attacking the cops who are trying to, face this on a regular basis. It's maddening.
It's maddening. It's also insane. I mean, it's just insane that we would be subjecting these law enforcement folks to the vitriol, to the hatred, to the rhetoric. But that's what the left has done, to defund the police. This isn't an accident, Mark. You know that. This didn't just accidentally happen that all of a sudden cops are getting shot left and right. It's because the left and the media and all of these woke celebrities and woke corporations are out there pushing this anti-law enforcement narrative. The police are structurally oppressive. That's BS. The police protect us. They protect our neighborhoods. They protect our families. They make it possible for us to live. They deserve our support. And a lot of them, Mark, they need raises. Cops, they volunteer for this job. They don't have to do it. They are, many of them, underpaid. A lot of cops got to work overtime in order to get a decent wage, or because their department is understaffed, undermanned. I hear that all the time. I think it's important to give them some real relief. You want to do something that will help police officers do their job better, that will help them protect us even better, give them a pay raise, put more cops on the street.
Well, and I don't disagree with that, but again, the political reality of getting that through the House, even if you'd pass it in the Senate.
I think it draws a sharp contrast, Mark, for sure. You've got the House Democrats out there talking about how we need to take away money from the police in order to devote to this, that, or the other, whatever their leftist cause of the day is. But what's consistent is this hatred, really, for law enforcement, and this constant blame the police, blame law enforcement, blame them first. No matter what happens, blame them. And I think, let's let the American people choose. I mean, Senate Republicans should be voting out support for police, should be voting out to more police officers through the street. And then let's let Joe Biden and the Democrats reject that, and then people can see the contrast.
Senator Josh Hawley is my guest. Why hasn't the Senate moved, or Congress overall, with the CARES Act too? And where are you on that right now? I mean, I still have a lot of concern about people here, especially through this winter, who are not able to work. It's devastating. I feel very lucky. And I think a lot of that focus on workers in this country has kind of drifted away just because maybe we're somewhat numb to it. So where are you right now with the CARES Act too, or whatever you might do for stimulus moving forward in the fall?
You just identified the key issue, which is work. And my own view, Mark, is that we need to focus. Congress needs to focus on helping people get back to work, even if they work in a job that in other states or some portions of our state where they can't physically go back to the job yet. We ought to help them get that job and keep it. We ought to help businesses rehire workers who have been laid off. We ought to get people out of the unemployment line and back to the security of a job. That will power us into full recovery, by the way. But it's also just the right thing to do. You know, government took away these jobs. It was government that shut down the economy because of Corona, but it was a government decision. Then let's undo the harm and help people get their jobs back. So that's what I think we need to focus on. I've introduced a plan to do that. Senator Gardner, Cory Gardner, has joined me in that. I'd like to see any further relief focus on that. Now, you asked about the status. You know, I honestly think right now, I don't think the Democrats want any further COVID relief. I think they want to have an issue that they can blame President Trump and Republicans for and say, see, they wouldn't approve $2 trillion in spending for blue state bailouts and so on and so forth. So right now, I don't see much appetite on the Democrat side of the aisle to get anything done. And I think that for our workers and working families, that's tragic.
So, longtime listeners of the show will remember that you weren't only a professor at Mizzou and attorney general at the United States Center, but also, more importantly, the official constitutional law expert of the Mark Reardon Show, and you've held that title for a long time. I'm guessing the president noted that when he put you on this SCOTUS list a couple of weeks ago.
You know, that was the first thing he said to me, Mark, actually, when he called me to tell me he was going to do it. He said, Mark Reardon says that you're an expert, so I got to have you on this list. It is still my most cherished title. I will tell you that, Mark. You know, it was a great honor to be listed as the president. He did call me. In fact, he and I talked about this a couple of times. He first talked to me about it, oh gosh, maybe 2 months ago or something like that. He said, Josh, you know, I want to put you on the Supreme Court list. And to be honest with you, Mark, I told him then and I told him again when he called me the other day, I said, don't do it. I said, I'm not interested. I said, it's a great honor. I mean, really, it's a great honor. Thank you. But I said, I just am not interested. I don't, that's not for me. That's not my calling. And there's a lot of other great candidates. We've got some great ones from Missouri. But I said, don't put me on it. I said the same thing to Mark Meadows, chief of staff. And I said the same thing to the White House counsel. But what the president said to me was, he said, Josh, I want to put you on this list. He said, I really want to. And so I said, well, thank you. I'm honored by that. But I'm not interested.
Yeah, it's not the worst kind of list to be on, though, so I can appreciate your perspective.
True.
Hey, I noticed on your Twitter feed, you know, something I've been talking about a lot is just the athletes getting involved in some of the social justice, some of the virtue signaling that goes on out there. You retweeted that column from Jason Whitlock. Jason's been a guest on the show many times, and I think he's been really on top of this. And the more recent column was about the booing of unity, the alleged booing of unity in Kansas City. His position was that was sort of a rejection of the looting and the violence and all those things. I think my take on that was a bit mixed because I think that's part of it, but I also think that there was frustration with all of the lead up. You know, people have brought up there's moments of silence for the military, there's all these things, but this was a big lead up where people are told over and over again, basically, you're racist. So what was your position on that? And I think that Jason does a great job of calling this down.
Yeah, totally. First, number one, Missouri sports fans, I don't take kindly to seeing Missouri sports fans called classless pieces of trash by these out-of-state woke liberals, which is what was happening on Thursday night. I mean, just an avalanche of hatred directed at the state of Missouri, at Missouri sports fans, at Chiefs fans. That's just garbage. And I tell you what, I don't. Those are fighting words to me, and so I responded pretty quick on Twitter. And I'm going to do that every single time. If you come and attack the people of Missouri, I'm going to go back at you because I'm a Missourian and I'm going to stand up for these folks. Point number one. Point number two, you can't tell me, I wasn't at the game, but I was watching it on TV. You cannot tell me that these fans were booing unity. They weren't booing unity.
No,
I agree
they
with
weren't.
What you said. They were probably booing, as I also said on Twitter, all of the corporate woke stuff that they've had jammed down their throats for months on end now. When they're told that you got to take this position or you're a racist, you got to agree with this or you're a racist. And, you know, just like the liberals calling them classless trash, that's basically been the message that a lot of the corporate wokesters have been sending for months. And I think people are just tired of it. But don't call Missouri trash.
And you're absolutely right. Now, one other topic. I almost forgot this one. And this is one of my big ones because Chris Rufo has been a guest on the show. I know you kind of got involved in this push to put the kibosh on something called critical race theory and this training that's going on. And, you know, it's one thing if corporate America wants to do this, I think you would agree. But these are tax dollars being used for these programs that are claiming to be about diversity, but they're far from that, Josh. You know that. Chris Rufo has done a great job on this.
Yeah, you know, his reporting has been eye-opening, and the fact that the federal government has been spending taxpayer money, to your point, on this race-based ideological agenda, it's also, frankly, Marxist, Mark. I mean, that's the origins. A lot of this critical race theory goes back to this sort of social Marxism about structural oppression, how American society is structurally racist, and the idea that they are putting federal employees through basically re-education and using federal tax money to do it is outrageous. I think it might also be a violation of the law, to be frank with you. But yeah, I demanded an investigation when this first came to light, and I was delighted that the Secretary of Energy immediately, he called me and he said, yeah, we're going to launch a full investigation, absolutely. And then the president signed that executive order, which is tremendous. I think it's still going on. And so my own view now is that Congress needs to just outright ban it. Make it clear that taxpayer money is not going to be spent on this stuff.
Yep. Look, it's really important. So keep me posted on that. And I think a lot of people, I envision the people listening right now who don't like you. They don't like me. They don't even know what this stuff is. And I would encourage them to at least look at Chris Rufo's Real Chris Rufo on Twitter and look at what he's exposed with some internal documents and whistleblowers on what goes on in these training sessions. I've highlighted some of them, but it is absolutely outrageous. Josh Hawley, great to have you on. I appreciate the time and we'll talk soon.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right. I think sometimes it's hard for me to even know if I'm on right now. Hopefully I am. We'll get to the news with Carol. It's 2:30 at the Voice of St. Louis. I feel like this is a little radio history here this afternoon. I lost power at my home and I'm doing the show from the parking lot of the Drury Inn and Sugar Fire. And I will be, the sales staff will be invoicing the Drury Inn and Sugar Fire for the mentions here this afternoon, just so they're prepared for that. It's 2:38. We go out to KNX in Los Angeles, and Brian Ping is with us here this afternoon to talk about some of the fires and the things that are going on and the craziness. And it's just, I mean, I keep seeing pictures, Brian, and video. And then, you know, we even have the haze here in St. Louis. From all this, we can't see obviously what you can see, but we have haze. How are you this afternoon?
Yeah, I'm good. Fortunately, not choking on the smoke. It's not that terrible where I am, but as you mentioned, I mean, this is something that's reaching far and wide, and particularly up in Northern California and Oregon, they seem to be getting the worst of it. Here, it is that really thick haze. I've been monitoring that air quality number and really getting acquainted with, you know, what it even means. And just keep saying unhealthy, unhealthy. It's been the case now for well over a week, and we're just waiting for some relief, and it's not coming. You need that good potent wind, but it's just been stagnant for so long now.
Yeah. So what's the get into detail on that just a little bit? What is the hope weather wise that will kind of move this in the direction of quelling these fires?
Bit of a double edged sword there, because this is what's called Santa Ana wind season, and that means usually you get the sea breeze coming in from the west. But during this time of year, a lot of times those winds will shift. They'll come down from the deserts in the opposite direction, and that can help push smoke. But it's also a very dry wind, so that carries its own danger, could actually contribute to the spread of the fire. Of course, one of the big things that could help in this situation is rain, but typically that's nowhere to be found around here in the month of September, even into October. So we could be stuck with this for weeks.
Well, let me read something, just sort of you put this into perspective, because, you know, we don't know the geography as well as you, but I mentioned this before. I subscribe to the LA Times. I like the LA Times. I was reading about what they call the Bobcat Fire, which is in Los Angeles County, and I guess it was getting close to the Mount Wilson Observatory. But this is the line that sort of caught my attention. The fire jumped the 2 freeway on Tuesday evening and ignited a spot fire that has burned nearly 1,000 acres, maybe more than that at this point. How does a fire like this jump the freeway?
There's flaming embers. They can go for, you know, a mile or two. And for somebody who has some experience covering these fires, it's definitely not uncommon. And when the fire jumps the freeway, it's you know, serious business. And as I mentioned, the wind can definitely carry these embers for, like I said, about a mile or two. And you got hot spots really all over the place. So unless you get this thing contained, it has that capacity to do that. And you mentioned Mount Wilson. If anyone who's been in the L.A. area knows, if you're down there and you see in the city, you look up in the mountains, you'll see a collection of radio and TV towers That's Mount Wilson right there. So it towers over everything. So anything beneath it is going to get that blanket of smoke whenever there's a wildfire up there. So that's what we're dealing with. I'm about 30 miles directly south of that observatory. And when it's there, I mean, it's basically just, it lords over all of Southern California. So that smoke is definitely going to come down our way. And we've been dealing with that. But it got pretty scary at Mount Wilson. But firefighters say they've been able to protect that for now. But yeah, as we've seen, things could always change.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the pictures of all the cool houses in the hills with pools and just the flames. It looks like a war, you know, a scene, war scene, a battle scene in the distance. So what's the, you know, we've over the last few years talked a fair amount about some pretty devastating wildfires, Ryan, but there's typically a few different causes. My understanding on some of these, has it been mainly lightning strikes, or are they not sure?
Well, there was the one fire that happened about, let's say, 80 or 90 miles east of here around Yucaipa, the San Bernardino National Forest, which was, from what we're told, a smoke bomb from a gender reveal party, of all things. And so that basically got a lot of people's attention. I know that a lot of fires up north have been due to lightning strikes. It's monsoon season, or at least it was monsoon season, meaning a lot of storm activity came up from, you know, the Gulf of California, Sea of Cortez. You know, like humidity causes lightning strikes, and that is what caused a lot of the fires up north. But with this Bobcat fire here, still looking to see what exactly the cause of this one is. But the containment is dropping, and it's just a matter of, you know, getting this thing under control before they can even really determine an exact cause of what's happening here.
Brian Ting is with us. He's a St. Louis guy, but he is an anchor and report at CanX in Los Angeles. We had here in St. Louis, sadly, an officer who was gunned down and killed a couple weekends ago. Brian, Officer Tamaris Bohannon, you may have heard about that story. Obviously, you've had this devastating story of the deputies that were shot at close range, targeted, it appears, in Los Angeles near a Compton Metro station. So what can you tell us about the update on this? Have they made any progress in finding the shooter?
No, there was some speculation yesterday that they may have zeroed in on somebody who may have been involved. And there was actually a 9-hour standoff with a suspect in the city of Linwood, which is right by Compton, not far from where that happened. It turned out to be somebody from an unrelated crime, a carjacking suspect from an incident that happened a couple of weeks ago. But a lot of people were on edge. The city was figuring, well, maybe this is, you know, go time. And had a much larger presence than usual, but a lot of that is because so many people were on edge. But this situation continues. So looking for the suspect here, the reward was $100,000. Thanks to private donations, that's now been doubled, so it's $200,000. Still no real solid progress as to bringing whoever did this to justice.
So the sheriff has drawn a little attention to himself, hasn't he? There was, you know, and I appreciated this to a certain extent, the challenge to LeBron James to put some money up for the reward. Now, I've seen people argue that's not the responsibility of LeBron James, and I think that that's probably true. And then you had, what, the widow of Kobe Bryant getting involved here, because that's the same department that had the kerfuffle with the photos from the helicopter crash, isn't it, Brian?
Right, it is. And, yeah, this dates back to January when the sheriff and the sheriff's department came under quite a bit of criticism over word that they had shared some of those photos from the crash scene inappropriately. And now it comes where he is asking another big Lakers star to put his money where his mouth is. He says he supports law enforcement and to help increase the pool for a reward to find whoever did this. And, you know, a lot of people just find that a little distasteful. And as far as, you know, on LeBron's part, he's hasn't really said much of anything in that regard just yet. But we'll have to see how that develops, because this is a sheriff who is rather outspoken. He doesn't really pull punches. And we'll just see whether or not LeBron steps up to the plate here. And if not, what the fallout could be from that.
So what's the COVID situation in California and Los Angeles? California's a pretty big state, so I understand that. But in Los Angeles, you know, it's interesting because we have our focus on COVID locally, but with all these national stories, even the hurricane isn't getting as much attention as it probably would given the nature of the news cycle right now.
The situation here is getting slightly better day by day. Our test positivity rate is getting down to around 4%. It's been cut in half from about a month ago. And it doesn't seem to be top of everybody's mind, or at least to the extent that it used to be. You don't see those long lines of people waiting to get tested. We are seeing some schools in the process of slowly starting to reopen. And we haven't seen much of anything as far as huge spikes, as far as that's concerned. I know that the local and state officials here want to be very diligent this time around, because they did come under criticism for how they reopened things back in May and June. And we saw the big spike. It wasn't very coordinated. It was mostly left to on a city by city and county by county basis how they wanted to reopen things. Wasn't very well organized. They want to err on the side of caution this time. And we were told a couple of days ago by LA County Public Health, they don't expect to do any more reopenings between now and the end of the month, because now we wait to see what happened over Labor Day. Was there a Labor Day surge like there was after Memorial Day and the 4th of July?
And shouldn't we kind of know that here in the next few days? I mean, I know that the numbers will lag a little bit, so maybe not for another 7 to 10 when you kind of look at this period. But this would be the period right now, whatever is going on with an increase in cases related to Labor Day, it would be probably right now or in the last 5 days.
Yeah, it usually does take a couple of weeks. And, you know, the Memorial Day surge, of course, there were other extenuating factors, graduations, the protests. But a lot of that didn't really start to take off until you're getting close to mid-June, at least here in Southern California. So once that 14-day period passes, which in this case would be around September 21st, so that would be by the end of this weekend, if we don't see a notable rise, I would say by the beginning of next week, especially with some kids going back to school as well, I think you're getting to a point where you can slowly start to get things back to normal. But, you know, to go anywhere further than that and say that we've beaten this thing, I mean, that would be total folly at this point, because we know that this thing tends to ebb a little bit and then come back, roar back at any moment.
You getting back home at all? Have you been back this summer?
Yeah, well, you know, making plans and looking at the holidays and what we can do and trying to be safe about it, you know. We keep getting assurances that, you know, air travel's safe and things like that. But I'm still somebody who goes into work. So, yeah, I got to be extra careful and cautious. But, yeah, there's light at the end of the tunnel, I think.
So you're allowed to come into work. I guess a lot of our news folks are, too, because I'm still – and the reason that I'm doing the show from my car this afternoon is because I'm doing the show at home. I don't know if you've been following the Cardinals, but things were going relatively well, and I don't think they're going as relatively well anymore, certainly not after last night's football game. But, Brian, it's always great to have you on, man. I think by this time, you know, in most years, I would have probably been out to L.A. at least 2 or 3 times by now, you know, for different movie-related work. And it's sad because I feel like, you know, I think we all feel like this is the lost year for a lot of different things.
Yeah, very much so. But, you know, we'll still be here when this whole thing subsides, whether it's in a month or however many months. But we'll be welcoming you with open arms when you do make it back out.
Well, we will be in touch for sure. And if you get into town, let us know. Brian Ping, KNX in Los Angeles. Good luck with everything out there. It is crazy. We know that.
All right. Thanks, Mark. And good luck with you, too, there in Missouri. I know it's a little bit of a struggle with COVID now, especially right around now, as it is with a lot of places. So be safe out there.
All right. Brian Ping from KNX in Los Angeles. He's a St. Louis guy. We like to touch base with him every once in a while on some of those West Coast issues.
KMOX is St. Louis's news, talk, sports, radio.
Well, a little bit of an unusual show this afternoon because of a power outage in my neighborhood. So, unfortunately, the Wi-Fi got knocked out, and I have been doing the show from the parking lot of the Drury Inn at 141 and 44. Swing on by. Stop by. Say hi. I'll be here for the next few hours. Hint, no, I won't be. But I will tell you that it's probably the best day for this to happen because we have baseball coming up. What a crazy game last night. Now, I think a lot of people probably – Dave, did you give up on the game because of the score? Were you watching when all this stuff was happening with Yachty and with the team last night? Did you catch that live or did you catch it later?
You know, I was actually busy making dinner for the kids, and by the time I turned on KMOX, it was 16-2 at that point. So I thought, you know what? I think I'm going to shut it down at this point. I don't think there's – unfortunately, there's not a comeback for this team.
Well, and I was upstairs, so I was helping my daughter get to bed, and I'll just say this, she was delayed, and I was just sitting on the couch while she was doing something in the bathroom. And this thing started unfolding with Ryan Braun. And I rewound, I said this earlier, I rewound the DVR just to hear Ryan Braun sort of chirp on the strike call. And it wasn't a strike. I think he was probably right. And then things just kind of spiraled from there with Yachty getting hurt and the benches emptying. But I'm sure we'll hear more of this on the Emory pregame, which is coming up right after the top of the hour. We have a few minutes to kill after Carol has news. We got a full show tomorrow. No show because of baseball on Friday on KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.